Shut up and sit down. All these Dale guys are super strong beef mountains.
What's kicking, little chicken? You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt LeGrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Tip of the day from a quote by Abraham Lincoln: give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I will spend the first four sharpening the axe. It's never too soon for some good old-fashioned preparation.
Bikes. Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Vondering, and I'm here with Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Lance Friggin' Hepler, welcome.
Welcome.
That's it.
For your listening pleasure.
Welcome to our silky smooth voices for your...
Silka smooth voices.
Silka wax chain...
Smoothness.
Smooth voices for your listening...
You guys
non-friction
don't even have anything to drink. You're all going to you're gonna all have
Did
to share mine.
A sponsor that I didn't know about?
Silka would be a great sponsor.
They would be a good sponsor.
That is a cool company.
They got cool tools... Cool lube
they do.
And cool wax.
And the name
about.
That's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
old Italian.
Quality stuff, man.
It is quality stuff. Yeah.
Cool. To Friggin's left, Mr. Matt LeGrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look frickin' fantastic.
Frickin' fantastic.
Rocking a frickin' Waterloo?
Waterloo. Yeah. Yes, Napoleon, he actually developed this sparkling water formula.
Oh, fantastic.
Lemon lime, naturally flavored.
Is it only for short
people? Bonaparte. It's for short people and people who aspire to be short in the future.
Yes, so true. Yes.
I fit the bill.
Okay, good. I like it.
All right. How you guys been? Pretty good?
Fran-freaking-tastic.
Fran-freaking-tastic.
What's our topic? What are we going to talk about today? What on earth?
The listeners want to know.
Wait, I don't know. That voice might be making fun of our listeners.
Yeah, maybe.
The listeners want to know our opinions on a few things.
I will say, you know, after last week's podcast about the aging athlete, we had lots of people come up to us and say they liked that topic. So if you're listening to this now and you haven't listened to, and you're older than 23 years old, maybe that's not aging.
Perfect.
If you're older than 35 years old, it's probably a podcast that might be interesting to listen to last week.
So, yeah, for sure. That would be podcast number 278.
Wow.
Are we 279?
Wow. We're getting close to the old 300 marker, and we got to do something big. I mean, yeah, I know 20 is a long way away, but still.
That would be towards the end of the year. Around the holidays, that will be 300, so we'll have to set something up.
Yes.
I still want to do... a live one this summer, and I really want to do something during.
You can do it in the winter.
The Tour de France.
For the 300. Oh, you want to do it?
Do both.
Okay.
Why not do both?
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Could we do it and watch the tour at a bar with a live podcast? That would be amazing. Maybe, but the problem is.
No, the tour's in the morning. Could we find a bar open in the morning? Probably. I don't know.
Anyway, the listeners want to know. The listeners have some questions for us.
Okay.
We had some people that responded to a little post that we put up, and they came. They came with a bunch of good questions that we're going to talk about today.
They came through.
That was pretty cool. I don't know. Anyway, the first question comes to us from Dustin Gottschall, and it revolves around the topic of chain waxing.
Oh, boy.
Not your mustache wax. Matt, your legs.
My mustache is almost to wax level. I'm pretty happy about it.
You still have some wax left over.
I do have wax.
What was that? Fisticuffs wax? Is that what it was called?
Fisticuffs, yep. No, and death grip.
Death grip?
So death grip was for the curls, and fisticuffs was for the smoothness and wavy.
I guarantee you could use that right on your bike chain.
Probably.
You could probably reach off some of the chain from like some of your wax, take the excess,
put it right back
in the stash. Oh, boy.
Brilliant. Okay.
Anyway, going back to the question, and it's, I mean, I don't know how much of a question it was more than him just going on a little bit of a rant about how great chain waxing is. He is wanting to know our opinion on it. He said that you're getting substantially more chain life The cost over time with said increased chain life is probably going to be one of those things that you want to take into consideration. He said zero friction. I don't think there is such a thing, but the much lower friction is definitely going to be something that's going to be a bonus. And one of the things that I really like, and again, it's not perfectly silent, but the much, much subdued quiet drivetrain. Those are some pretty big bonuses for chain waxing. Full disclosure, I have never used a waxed chain.
A real waxed chain.
Yeah, and I mean, we've sold a bunch of them because we do carry them at the lab.
Do they come pre-waxed? It's like a wax. Oh, okay.
And then we do sell a bunch chain. Of waxing kits that work out pretty well.
Yeah.
But
okay, we should explain what this actually means because we may have listeners that don't understand what a waxed chain actually is.
So for all bikes, you'll want to lubricate your chain or else it'll get like very squeaky and it'll cause a bit more damage to the components on your bike and things like that. Basically, those little chain links, they need to move smoothly throughout the drivetrain of your bike. So that's the basics of lubrication of your bike. And then getting into the weeds a bit, there are lubricants and things like that that are better than others. And technically, if your drivetrain is more efficient, you're putting out less watts to do to move faster. So that's a good thing to be able to
absolutely. And definitely something that you want to be doing for a myriad of reasons for performance, because it's part of that whole marginal gains. And that's something that's very inexpensive that you're going to get a good return on your investment for your time and the purchase of the lubricant that you're putting on there.
So yeah, so performance and taking care of your bike.
One of the other upsides to waxing your chain as well is the fact that when you use lubricants, like everybody that's used a lubricant and has touched a chain has received that little black mark that
you call it the Cat 5 tattoo.
The Cat 5 tattoo on the inner part of your calf.
Wear it with pride, people.
Exactly. When you wax a chain, you're not dealing with that dirty drivetrain. And that's a good thing because A, you're not getting wax everywhere, but B, that grime that can build up over the course of time is going to cause excessive wear on your not only your chain, but your entire drivetrain.
What tends to happen is you still get dirt particles and things like that built in the wax, but then they flake off a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because the wax, any sort of like wet lubricant and things like that, they're good. They work well in certain conditions and things like that, but they can attract more dirt and grime.
Yeah.
So there's that. Trade-off.
Okay, so here's the big difference, though. A lubed chain is when you just take some liquidy, viscous material and squirt it onto your chain. You know, hopefully you're doing that once every two or three rides so that your chain is moving appropriately. A waxed chain is where you take your chain off the bike and then you strip everything off of the chain. You
technically, you should only have to do that once, the stripping part.
That's interesting.
Strippers.
I would think with all the...
You should know all about this.
You only need strippers once.
Yes. You should know this by now.
So you
this is where you've been going wrong.
This is where I've been going wrong. You strip everything off the train, off the chain, then you dry it out, and then you soak it in some type of molten wax. And then you pull your chain out of the molten wax, let it dry, knock off the excess, and reapply it to your
You can bike. Actually put it on even with excess and stuff like that and just spin it and it flakes out and it makes a huge mess.
Okay.
I know from personal experience.
Okay. So the beauty of a wax chain is that they tend to go faster. They tend to cause less friction. Mm. They tend to last longer in between applications. So am I understanding this right? Okay. So
I think the thing that people probably love the most is that they're not dirty. You reach down and you touch the chain or whatever, and it's like, it's just kind of like wax. It's not a problem. So I think that's at least my understanding of what people prefer most. I mean, yes, there are performance benefits to it. Again, like we talked about the drivetrain and how much how much wattage you can save. You could probably, in some extreme cases, save 5 watts through your drivetrain. So a free 5 watts, you can think about it that way. They'll claim different numbers and things like that, you know. But again, like you can also go from like someone that doesn't take care of their drivetrain at all to a nice waxed, you know, chain and everything's working perfectly. So yeah, so you can probably gain even more than that, but you can kind of think of it as a free 5 watts.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's drivetrain efficiency. And most of the waxes on the market, you can buy different kits and things like that, but most of them are paraffin-based. So
it's like paraffin wax. So if you're making your fingers in, getting your nails done or something. Not that
I don't know that much about that, but I know that it's used in cooking, and so it's at the grocery store.
Paraffin wax.
Paraffin wax. And so it's actually dirt cheap. Like, you get this can, and it's like size of a Coke can or whatever, but thicker, like a size of a tuna can, which we talked about earlier.
A number 10.
But yeah, and so you get tons of it, and it's like $2 at the grocery store.
Okay.
And that should last you a long time. But that's paraffin-specific wax.
Correct.
Now, if you buy the nicer stuff...
So we were joking about Silka, because Silka just came out
with their own formula
wax, and it's...
Well, do you want me to tell you the formula that's top secret?
What's the formula? It's paraffin wax?
It's paraffin-based.
It's
95% paraffin wax, and then they have they add Teflon... Okay. Powder.
So it's even slicker.
Yeah. And they add one more thing, and I can't remember what it was. I used to know. It's
non-scale tungsten disulfide.
Okay. Thank you.
Whatever that is.
And a bag of that wax from significantly Silka more is how much, Jake?
$40.
$40.
But that's not bad, because that'll probably last you a pretty long time.
They also have...
Could be worse.
Silka also has their own stripper that they sell.
You want to define stripper there, Lance?
I'm interested.
Stripper is to just remove everything off of the chain.
Oh, that's so disappointing. Stripper.
It just strips all the junk off the train.
Yeah, there's if you get into this stuff on YouTube, there's different ways to strip the chain. And there's some weird stuff out there. Like, I've looked at all this stuff, and some of the cheap stuff is still really good. It's like... some sort of like motor oil or something that they just, I don't know. There's some weird stuff out there and some, I don't remember. I don't remember all the stuff, but people use like that. They put the chain in a can and they just shake it around for a while to kind of remove every last little bit of what comes with it. Typically what you'll do is you'll take a brand new chain, and the solvent that they use to put on these chains isn't that ideal. Like, most of us take the brand new chain right out of the bag and we put it on the bike.
Yeah.
Because it's fine, and you can do that. It's just that is not the most efficient. Those solvents are built to like keep the chain in working order for long term while it's sitting on the shelf, not necessarily to be the most efficient through the drivetrain.
Yep.
And so, and that's fine. Don't stress about it if you don't care about it. It's fine. But like, a lot of nerds will, let's call them nerds, they'll completely, that's the time where they'll take all that stuff and they'll strip all of that off and then apply wax.
Yep. It's the very first thing I do when I get a new chain is take off the stuff that comes on the chain. And if you grab it with like a towel and you try and like hold it to get that to come off, it's just going to stick. It's not even going to go through. That's so tacky. And it's, again, like Matt said, it's meant to prolong the life of it while sitting on the shelf. Yes. They don't want it to wax, or not wax, but they don't want it to rust. They don't want the chain to get degraded in any way, shape, or form. So it's more there for a protective layer as opposed to it being a performance layer.
Yes.
So you take that off with a little bit of, solvent, like a degreaser or something like that, or even like a Simple Green will work to a certain degree, but the degreasers are going to work best. And then you're going to want to lube it up and you're off and riding. So,
okay. So here's my thoughts on ice chains. Why did I say
wax
ice chains? Wax chains.
You could ice it. See how that works for you.
Just stick it in a bucket of
freezer.
Ice. I mentioned that because there's a company that will do this for you. Mm-hmm. That's called Ice Friction, but we'll get to that. Wax chains are faster, better. Yeah. They're much better for your bike, better for your drivetrain. You save watts. They're quieter. There's everything that's brilliant about them. It's a pain in the ass to do.
So, well, that's kind of where Silka's changed the game a little bit here, though.
I hope so.
Yes, because you get this bag that's got everything in there, and then you clean off your chain.
So it's got stripper and wax.
No. You have to buy the stripper separate. You clean it all up, and then you're going to throw your chain in the bag, if I'm not mistaken, and then you boil it or get it melted and then shake it up, and that's pretty much how they do it.
But which is fine, but like the difference between that and like, you could also go and just grab a container of wax and do the same thing. And dip your chain in just straight paraffin wax. And yeah, you're probably losing the one tiny, tiny, minute bit of performance because it doesn't have Teflon and whatever other weird stuff they put in there, but it's pretty much perfect. The other thing that you can do, and Lance, you might be interested in this, is you can actually buy chains that come pre-waxed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I've done that, and I've done that, I think, for 2 out of the 3 Ironman races that I did.
So you use it brand new on race day.
Yes.
And and the wax chain is good for a couple weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's like, a big race like Ironman, I'm like, this I don't remember how much it cost. It probably cost $50 extra or $40 extra or something like that to get this wax. And what they do is they take a chain. They'll be like, all right, well, this is, you know, Shimano, whatever. Take that chain. They'll strip it and then they'll wax it and then send it to you waxed.
Yeah.
Ready
so
to go.
This company called Ice Friction that I just too. Mentioned. Yeah. You can send them a chain to have it re-iced or you can buy chains pre-iced.
I think you should
waxed.
Well, call it iced if that's their branding.
That's their branding.
But I think you should consider that because what's the extra $40 when you're like, hey, this is the unbound race that I'm going to do once in a lifetime or an Ironman race that you've been training for all year. $40 extra is not going to break the bank.
The pre-wax chains are about $150.
Yeah. Price cheap.
Inflation, my
what?
Friend.
Not cheap.
Not
inflation.
Cheap.
Inflation.
And to have a chain re-waxed is $55. Okay. You have to send it to them. Yeah. They re-wax it and send it back.
The other thing that's good about... So the company that I used, this is a long time ago because I don't need to worry about it anymore, but like they would actually, as part of the process, is they can... there's some things you can do to... basically polish the chain in the little bit that spins. And so anything that you can do to make that more uniform and polished ends up being a little bit more performant. And this is just, you know, this is tiny, tiny little bits of
benefit. We're splitting hairs here.
Yeah. But I mean, over 112 miles and you're not even drafting, you're just sitting in the aero bars like, meh.
It could help.
It's worth doing.
Maybe. I will say I have done this a couple of times to my own chains, and I found the process so annoying that I quit doing it.
That's why I never did it personally. Yeah. The fact that you can boil the chains in these bags, that kind of changed my mind on that in terms of like how easy it is.
Then you pull your chain out, and you can still reuse the bag several times.
How many times?
It just solidifies after you take it out.
Maybe like four times or so. It just depends on how gross it gets.
Some people are saying that they are doing multiple batches of chains at a time, like maybe three chains just so you have some on deck. So I think there might be enough for maybe two or three applications in there. I'd have to go double check. And again, I can't speak as an authority on this. Maybe we need to get the guys from Silka on the podcast to talk about this a little bit more. But
that would be amazing.
Yeah, well, they've already agreed to do it. I just need to set it up. So,
The main guy from Silka is like
Josh
a superstar.
Putner or something like that. Yeah.
He's like a superstar when it comes to
marginal gains.
Yep. Absolutely. In fact, I think he has a podcast.
Yep.
People should listen to it. It's decent. I haven't listened to it in a long time, but it's good. And it's called Marginal Gains, maybe, or
something like
that.
When
you do these rounds of chains, you still need to hang them to dry. It almost still
needs
like
process.
A little, like you have a space in your garage. You could do this.
Probably. Yeah. I have like five bikes in rotation.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of chains that
you
I
could do all
I
at
could
once.
Be doing this, you know, all at once, especially because it's not like just sticking lube on your chain, which takes 15 seconds. This is, it takes a little bit more time, but.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like I personally just don't have the time to even just like go out there and investigate doing. Like I barely have enough time to get myself ready and off to a ride, let alone like, right, let's take the next hour or two to play
with chains.
So, but I do think that it's probably worth it. And now that they've kind of made this a little bit easier, it's probably worth trying. I mean, here's another thing that they're saying though. You're going to get 25K out of your chain life, which is what roughly...
Wow.
100,000 miles. I don't understand how that's feasible, though, or how that's even plausible, given the fact that your chain...
25,000 kilometers. 25,000 kilometers.
That's what it says on the
out
website.
Out of a wax chain.
Out of a wax chain.
Before it has to be re-waxed.
Re-waxed. I think
no. The chain itself will last. Okay, thank
a
you.
A chain typically is going to stretch, and I don't see this... keeping it from stretching. I could see the wear components, like the rollers in there. If you're wearing those things out and they're, you know, it's from like all the crap that gets on your chain, like the dirt and the grime and all that.
Yeah.
I could see that being a definite upside. If you're just out soft pedaling around, maybe your chain's not going to stretch around. So maybe you can get 25K out of it. But given the way that we like to ride and get after it, the chains are going to stretch. Now, granted, the SRAM chains are going to last a lot longer than the Shimano chains, but you're still going to get that torsional stretch, and that's where you start to notice them shifting poorly. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think... I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't expect you to get... Don't buy it. I would tell people, like, don't buy it for that reason. I think you buy it for the reason that your chain just... It's smooth, and it doesn't get gunked up as much. I don't think you would want to say, like, I'm going to... I wouldn't even say don't expect to double your chain life.
I'm getting
I don't know.
anywhere from 3,500 to 5,000 miles out of a SRAM chain.
So
that's fantastic compared to what I was getting with the Duracell and Ultegra chains that I was using before.
Which is great, but doesn't SRAM have like a rule against reusing the MasterLink piece?
They do.
This is true. They want you to replace it every single time, and that's another $3 or $4 if you're going to take it off and rewax it.
Here's your thing: like if you're waxing, that's the plan. It's like you pull this off, and you're going to hang it to dry and all this stuff. It's like, you kind of want to use those same master links over. I don't know. Do you guys reuse it, or do you guys use a new one each time?
The few times that I've reused a master link, I've busted it. In a race situation.
Do you think it's because that chain is thinner? Maybe. It's got more metal across the top, but it's thinner.
It has to do with the way that it snaps in place. And I think what ends up happening is like once you unsnap it, it will wear that bit, and then you're subject to it either failing or becoming unattached, and then your chain drops. So you
just changed out the master
every time. Now, full disclosure, I have reused a chain link a few times. I still have never broke a SRAM chain. I generally, though, as a rule of thumb, will put a new one on there, but I'm not taking off my chain unless I'm replacing it. I don't take it off to clean it, like do a deep, deep, deep clean on it.
Yeah, I don't ever do
probably
that
should, but I think if you're going to be doing that every 2-3 months, it's not that big of a deal to spend a few dollars on a new master link. Just get that peace of mind, knowing that you're not going to break that. I don't want to be cheap guy and all of a sudden be in the middle of like a big race or in a sketchy situation or wherever where I need my chain to perform and all of a sudden it snaps. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
And it's never pleasant when you break a chain either. No. Usually it happens under a lot of load. And if you're like out of the saddle sprinting and it busts on you, you could go down.
That's what happened to me. It was in a mountain bike race.
Yeah.
And I was putting in this huge effort to get around a guy early in the race, and my master link just exploded.
Oh,
and
boom.
Race over. Yeah.
But
I had to Strider bike it back to the car.
Going back to some more of the perks and benefits of though, like if it stays clean and it's going to continue to work. I mean, think about that from a mountain bike or a gravel perspective, like how nice that is. I mean, is that what all the pros are doing? Or you still hear about the guys that carry the little mini bottle of the squirt lube and like they're like maybe 80 miles into a 150-mile race or something like that. They're leaning down. They're putting some lube on their chain. I mean,
really?
Are they?
Yes. Actually, Peter Setna does that quite often.
Yeah,
at Unbound, after the mud, that was the one thing I did to my bike at the aid station.
Yeah.
Was I re-lubed my chain.
Yeah.
Because it was not good. So.
So how would the wax have held up against the mud?
Great question. I don't know if it. That mud, I don't think it would have made a difference what you had on your chain.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have mattered at all.
Because that is, gritty, and if you're working something through the grittiness, all that's going to end up doing is stripping it. So it's kind of like sandblasting anything, if you're going to sandblast something that removes stuff, that's effectively kind of doing the same thing. So
I wonder if you had like a really nice thick layer of wax on there where you're expecting things to flake off, and then it's like as it gets mudded up, it's just like
flaking off.
Flakes off, and I don't know, it's impossible. When it's that thick, it's going all throughout the chain.
Yeah. I can think of rides that we've been on.
We do
gravel rides and it's muddy out. And I've seen people that have had waxed drive chains. You look over there, it looks pretty good compared to mine that looked pretty bad. Yeah. So there might be something there. But going back to the whole setup process too, like one other thing is like once you get it all done and it's prepped and it's ready to rock and roll, when you put it on your bike and go to ride, that first couple miles, it's a freaking mess because that it's shedding wax everywhere.
Don't do it in your garage like I did.
Yeah.
You want that
be away from
else.
Like especially don't be inside your house. and if it's in your garage, you're gonna be cleaning up a mess. But I don't know. There's pros and cons. But I guess at the end of the day, if you've got a clean drivetrain that's gonna be a lot quieter, it's gonna work efficiently, and you just have to apply, some sort of like cause the Silka stuff, they recommend that you apply the Super Secret chain wax.
Yeah,
which is a wax-based chain lube to the wax chain every once in a while, and not all the time, but every once in a while. I guess at the end of the day, like if you're not cleaning, because I'm neurotic, I clean my chain before every single ride, so that's just one less thing I have to do there. Maybe you just save that time in other ways and just make the time to make it happen, and maybe make it make sense in your riding regimen.
That's not real life. You just spend those extra minutes
doing something else instead.
Death scrolling Instagram or something. It doesn't move to something else. But I agree. I mean, I'm obviously intrigued with these new products from Silka because I gave up on chain waxing when I went through it a few times and I switched to a wax-based lube, which is what Squirt is.
Yeah.
But I mean, Squirt, your chain's a filthy mess still. Yeah. I mean, it needs to be cleaned almost every time.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
what do you guys think of the $40 wax that they're selling from silica versus $2 thing of wax, paraffin wax, which is, and those two things that you're buying are 95% the same.
That 5% probably makes a big difference, to be completely honest with you.
You think?
I do.
I think you should look at the numbers.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Did you already do a little scroll on that?
No. But I mean, I've seen these numbers in the past.
It's interesting.
With the paraffin wax that you buy from the grocery store,
it's really good.
But you need like a crock pot that you can dedicate to the wax.
That's what typically people do. They buy a little crock pot from Amazon for $20 and they're like, this is not going to be used for cooking.
It's only for wax and it sits in the corner of your garage and you plug it in when it's time to wax things.
Yeah, but I mean the addition is a bag. It's just a bag, right? Like that's what they're selling here.
Yeah.
Well, they're selling.
I'm not saying that it's not great. Yeah, I'm just saying like I might use that for big races, and I might use the regular paraffin wax for everything else.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to sell something that's a little all easier. One stop shop. It's all right there. You just toss your chain in and you melt it and mix it up and do all of your fun things to it, and then you're off and running again. I think they're trying to sell the simplicity of that and the fact that it's not quite as messy and you don't have to go out and buy another thing.
And people are not super price sensitive, right? I mean, for a lot of bike stuff, $2 versus $40 is that's a big price difference.
It is, and if you're looking to do it on a budget, that's definitely
the way to go for sure.
I don't know. I just like the fact that just doesn't make as much of a mess. Granted, I could probably take that same paraffin wax and go find a bag that might be boil safe that you can use to cook vegetables in or something like that.
Yeah.
Do it a different way. Maybe $2 plus a $2 bag and you're off and running.
Don't know.
Bob's your uncle, right?
I don't know, but then you got to boil this somewhere. Are you doing all this in your kitchen?
Yep. Where else do you do it? On your camp stove?
Does your wife love it when you're waxing chains in the kitchen?
But if it's in a sealed,
do that when she's not around.
Ziploc
don't do it when she's around. Wait till she's gone. That's what I would do.
All right. So
I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast.
Maybe we need to get
they don't like us that much.
Maybe we need to get the Soka Boys on here to give us some little further education.
Lovely. We'll hit them with the hard questions.
Anyway, are you guys up for maybe trying some chain waxing here in the near future?
Anytime.
No, I'm going to give my chains to Dustin and have him do it for me. There you go.
Well, I'm sure he doesn't mind me sharing this information, but Dustin did say that the Soka chain stripper or the chain strip wax, whatever prep system, whatever. His final quote went on that was, it was the best thing since my vasectomy. So, which I laughed out loud and almost fell off my chair, but
where did he have his vasectomy done? Cause I want to know.
I don't know. Okay, well. I think he's talking about the, never mind. Okay. I digress.
Methanated spirits, I think, is what a lot of people use to strip their chains. They've had good luck with that.
Interesting.
There are different. I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it, right? But
gotcha. All right, let's jump into the next question, and this is kind of a hybrid question that two different people posted up there, and it kind of all kind of feeds into the same thing. And this was from David Barna and from Matthew Percompas, and it was talking about group sets. And the first one, part one of this question was, SRAM came out with their Apex AXS, which is a electronic shifting group set from SRAM. And he's wanting to know, is SRAM diluting itself by having four different electronic shifting group sets?
The answer is yes. Move on. Next question. They've
effectively have gone away from all things mechanical.
Pretty much.
And it probably makes a lot of sense for them. So what they're going to do is distinguish their group sets on like weight.
Yeah.
Which, again, it makes sense because you are spending more time machining parts if you're going to reduce weight, right? Like that's the mechanical sales, whatever, the engineering part of it. And that's why it would sell for more.
Yep.
Maybe better materials. I don't know. But a lot of people are going to be like, weight's not that big of a deal. And you guys have done this. You've ridden on these different mechanical things on these different mechanical group sets, and they're pretty good. Like no matter which one you get, it's like, bam, they lock right in, and you're just, the precision of shifting isn't going to be that big of a difference between their bottom budget, you know, electronic shifting and their top of the line one.
Yeah. You will definitely notice some nuances. You're going to notice a little bit of a smoother transition, a little bit cleaner of a shift.
Because of the way the teeth of the things, right? Because
exactly.
That's the way they design the teeth for them.
And the materials sometimes will help it shift a little bit.
Do you think if we blindfolded you and we gave you like the bottom of the barrel versus the top end, do you think you could get it correct?
Yeah.
You think you do?
No, we're going to have to do that. A lot of that is going to come from the sound. Like, I'm very sensitive to the sounds that bikes make, and I can generally tell.
What if we wax the chain? What is that?
Oh, and I don't know. Maybe I won't know then. You know what? I have a lot of people that come into the lab.
Yep.
They're always looking for, all of the things. And everybody who comes in, almost everybody, I can't say everybody because that's just not the case, because one of the people on here that we're going to talk about in a second doesn't want this necessarily. They are wanting electronic shifting. Mm. And what's nice about that is SRAM has created a system where they can now afford people the opportunity to have electronic shifting at a much, much more reasonable cost price.
Because now there's four levels of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this latest one that just came out is the cheapest that they've come
out with.
Least expensive.
Probably going to be, I haven't looked at it. I don't even know what is it, about $1,000 for a group set.
Wow.
Versus like the top shelf red group set's going to be like $4,500. So that's a pretty big difference. So before you were like, all right, well, let's go down one tier from red to force. You're still looking at $2,500-ish in there, somewhere in that ballpark. Well, and then they came out with the Rival, and we're like, oh, sweet. Now that's like, what, $1,800 or something like that? And now we're at the
Axis.
The Axis, the Apex stuff.
Apex,
it's $1,200.
Is it $1,200?
Yeah.
That allows people to get in. And what's nice about that is all of their stuff, you can mix and match. So maybe you get into an Apex because that's what you can afford. And then maybe 6 months, 12 months down the road, you decide, hey, I'm going to lighten the load. And maybe I want to jump up to a Force cassette because it's a lot lighter, or a Force crankset because that's a lot lighter.
There's a lot of weight in the crankset.
Exactly. Yeah. Those two things, they're heavy. So you can change that out. Next thing you know, you saved yourself quite a bit of weight. Couldn't afford it at the very beginning, but you saved up and you made that investment, and all the things play nicely together, and you made that jump.
Nice.
And it's also nice too that the batteries work the same for all of them, so that's kind of cool.
But I could definitely see why, you know, people would be concerned, like, hey, that just get the cheap stuff, it's going to probably be pretty good. I mean, I could see how that could be a problem for SRAM's marketing department.
Yeah, and the fact that they just don't offer these
and Shimano's in the same boat. They have the same problem. They're 105 stuff. Don't they have 105 electronic that people were like, oh, it's pretty damn good, but it's just a little heavier.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the fact that you still have the option of, you know, doing a mechanical, like, as opposed to electric, but I don't know. It's hard to say, because I see the benefits still of not doing everything electrical. Like, I like the fact that I think that there should be options for people.
Yeah.
I know that we all like electronic shifting. We all ride it. We prefer it. But something nice to be said where it's like, oh, you know, this cable's a little off, just give it a little tug and you're good. Like, it's just, there's something beautiful about mechanical.
Yeah, you can go both ways. I mean, Lance, in all of your time on bikes, we'll just even say maybe just for the last 3 or 4 years, how often do you see somebody roadside with a problem that is mechanical versus electronic based?
More often mechanical.
Yeah.
But that, don't you think that's because of the number of mechanical? I mean, like, if you think about it, like, entire cycling world with all the bikes that are just on the road from the, because there's bikes that are 20 years old in people's garages. It's all mechanical.
Yeah, that's true. All the older stuff is mechanical, but there's more moving parts and more things to potentially fail with a mechanical thing because you have all those cables and the cables fray and the cables crack and the cables break, but also batteries die for the other stuff. But there's fewer potential moving parts with the electronic group sets than there is, this is my opinion, than with mechanical.
I just, the likelihood of something failing on an electrical based drivetrain is less than a mechanical, in my opinion. It's all too often that you see a cable break. That just happens all of the time.
But it's also easy to fix. There's a lot of cycling shops that are gonna be like, yeah, we fix this cable for you.
100%. 100%.
Versus when you show up to the bike shop and you're like, yeah, my
firmware doesn't work.
My SRAM, you know, it's this particular version of SRAM, and they might not have the part. They might not have that particular thing to be able to, because it's probably a full swap.
Yeah. I mean, anything can be fixed at a bike shop, whether it's going to be quick or not. That's another question, but I'm more concerned of, like, all right, when I'm out there, when it counts, and if I'm out in the middle of nowhere on a gravel ride, I'd rather have that peace of mind that I'm using an electronic group set that is going to work for me, knowing that it's very simple for me to carry an extra SRAM battery because those things are so stinking small.
Right.
Granted, it's a little bit different if you're running GRX and you're running some Di2 stuff on that. If your SRAM battery dies, you're good. If your Shimano battery dies, you're kind of in a bad spot.
You're done.
In a pickle.
You're single speed.
That's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
it's happened to me.
Rather run the electronic setup just because I know that it's going to work.
It's interesting because I think that there are probably a large number of people that would listen to that and be like, I would want to run mechanical for the exact reasons that he's describing. It's because
exactly.
If something happens, I can probably fix it.
Yeah. Now, if you're going to be the type of person that's going to pack and take with you an extra cable, and you want to install that while you're out there. Cause like Lance, when you're out in the middle of nowhere doing a gravel ride, how often is it that it's smooth sailing to get home? Easy, no climbs. And you're not going to be stuck in like your big, huge gears that are going to
hardly ever is it like completely smooth sailing.
Yeah. So when you break a cable on your, say, rear derailleur, your bike is going to default to the hardest gear.
Correct.
You're going to be in that big gear right there, yes. And you're going to be screwed. Like, you're going to be walking up hills. Yeah, you can coast downhill or go fast downhill, but as soon as you hit another hill, you're done, unless you're able to change your cable out there.
Yeah.
Now, you can adjust your rear derailleur. You could start messing with the limit screws.
You could pull the cable and tie it off. I mean, there's weird stuff you can do.
That's assuming that you know what you're doing, but you can do some other things that can help you get home. You know, a good example was Paul First was, he came to one of our flogging rides on his road bike. He rode in and we are pulling out of the parking lot and we literally just got going. And before we even left the parking lot, his shift cable broke. And so nobody knew this either. And what was funny is like, we all kept riding and then like, where's Paul at? And I don't know, maybe one person did know, but long story short, what he did was is he just tied off the cable and then he adjusted the limit screws and he pretty much,
he had his
front rear derailleur, but he just found one gear up front that was going to work and just locked it in. And he actually ended up catching us by the regroup spot he rode the rest of the ride and he was just fine. Now,
Beast. If
he was stuck in his biggest gear, he's going to be screwed, but he knew how to make that change and make the adjustment on the fly. It wasn't ideal, but he basically rode up. It wasn't a single speed, but it was a 2x that he was going to be able to shift and he made it work.
Here's a completely anecdotal example as well that happened at Unbound. I was on a SRAM Axis and David Barna, our teammate, was on mechanical Shimano.
Yeah.
And the mud was, it just destroyed tons of people's drivetrains. Lots of people ended up like breaking things and changing to single speed. David's front derailleur quit working in the mud at mile, what was that?
Oh yeah, it was 15.
15?
Ouch. Jeez.
Did he ride the rest of the race?
In his small chain ring.
Really?
Yes. So I don't actually know if that's exactly where it broke, but his front derailleur quit working at some point because it was just so gummed with mud. It just would not shift anymore.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't have any, my SRAM Axis did fantastic.
Yeah.
Even in the mud, and his did not make it, and it was Shimano.
Well, and this is another point that we can kind of segue into is like the service of an electronic group set is far easier and it's far less prone to having issues. Like, it just shifts. It knows where it needs to be. Now, if you fall and you bend your derailleur hanger, if you fall and your front derailleur gets like kind of pushed in or something like that and needs to be realigned, you have to realign that. You have to fix those things. But if you keep your bike in good working order, you don't crash it and take care of it, the process of needing to get it tuned is far less. And still take it in for your once a year tune-up, or if you're your own mechanic, you're going to check that kind of stuff every now and then. And it's just a matter of listening. If it's not shifting exactly perfect, it's just a quick, simple thing that you can make an adjustment to. But I think it's a lot easier to, A, keep the bike maintained, and B, in situations like what Lance was talking about, like when you're riding in really crappy stuff, you're not having to worry about the gunk and the grime and all that other stuff working its way up into the cable housing that's going to cause it to shift extremely poorly. And then you're going to be like beating your head against the wall, fingering, I can't figure out how to fix this thing. It's just getting stuck here. It's not doing that. And then the shifters themselves, those things get gunked up. If you get stuff up there in those little fine gears and whatnot that you use to make the shifts, that's going to screw up your whole riding experience as well. Because if those things aren't working, or if you get a bunch of stuff up there and they end up blowing up on you, you're screwed. Like David Barna is another perfect example. Like his mechanical brake or shift lever on it was a SRAM Ultegra.
Yes.
It just stopped working. Something's in there, and it's like it won't let you push, and won't, like if you push too hard, you know you're gonna break something.
It gummed up something.
Yeah, something got in there, and it won't shift. Versus pushing a button, it just does what it's supposed to do. Yeah. So
back to the, I think, original question. These companies, you think, when they go all mechanical,
yeah,
do they leave? I mean, do they kind of shoot themselves in the foot because mechanical works so well?
Mechanical, you mean?
I'm sorry, I said it the wrong way. Electronic shifting.
I think, given the numbers of, like, if you start to look at all of the pros and cons of all of them, I think you're going to lean towards electric. You're going to go the electric shifting route because the odds of things happening and being an issue are less, in my opinion.
Do you think that there's less reasons to buy, you know, SRAM Red electronic versus, you know, Force or their Apex? Do you think they're shooting themselves in the foot, like by saying having like they're undercutting themselves?
Well, the only thing I like about it is that they make electronic shifting, which I think on the whole is a better option for just about all cyclists. I think what I like about that, though, is they're making it more accessible to more people.
Sure.
So I think in that regard, it's a win. You know, if you've got somebody that's like on the fence between Rival and Force, like, and now we've got Apex in there, like, oh yeah, they're just going to go with the Rival stuff versus they're not going to maybe jump up to the, I don't know. It's just the psyche of people is going to be what's going to drive this ultimately. But
I bet you a lot of people will be like, I want to go for that middle one.
Yeah.
Pick the one in the middle. You get all these, you have three choices. Everyone's going to pick the one in the middle.
Yes,
and but yeah, true. It's hard to say. I'm very interested in the, like, is this going to do damage to these companies and their profit line? Because you've got to imagine that, well, first of all, I think a lot of times electronic shifting, even at the baseline, is going to be more expensive than mechanical. But are their profits going to be take a hit because, like, people are going to be buying less Red when they know that, yep, Apex is just as good, but it weighs a little bit more?
Well, I think when you're talking about Red, you've got a certain person that's automatically going to default to what is the best thing out there? 100%. What's the lightest thing out there? I want that.
Yes,
I agree. There's a lot of people that want that. And then there's a lot of people that have that same mindset, but their pocketbook doesn't quite back that up. So they're going to fall to Force. And then for a long time, it was like when the Rival came out and they had their electronic shifting, there's a lot of people like, oh, sweet, now I can get into the game. It's still expensive. It's more expensive than mechanical, but at least it gets me into the game. And now there's a whole different like segment of people that I think that they can attract and have them come over because it's even more accessible.
I noticed that with Shimano, it was like, I think they did the 105 electric shifting, right? And it was still really kind of expensive for 105 stuff. I was like, oh, well, it's expensive, but it's electronic shifting and it probably shifts just as well as anything else out there.
So this brings up David Barna's question that he sent in, which is about the rumored Shimano drivetrain that is not electric, that mechanical. Well,
they're gravel.
So right now Shimano has an 11-speed GRX gravel mechanical group set, and there's a rumor that there's a rumor that a 12-speed is coming out. For Shimano.
Would it be mechanical or?
Mechanical 12-speed. So is that more interesting? I mean, I think we've already covered this question.
If it's priced accordingly, if it's GRX, if they have like GRX mechanical and it's 12-speed, and then they also have GRX electronic shifting, and you would expect the electronic shifting to be more expensive, and that could just be the delineator. And maybe it is what it is. But it's cool that it's... They're providing the option for people potentially.
Now,
these are rumors.
I'm going to go out there and say that this is a good move on Shimano's behalf if they're going to have mechanical, because I think you still need to have that, because there are a lot of cyclists who are purists. And if you don't believe me, just go jump on any message board that talks about electronic shifting. You'll see them chiming in left and right, talking about like, oh, that stuff's crap, give me mechanical on everything. And these are the same guys that probably still love rim brakes for a bunch of different reasons. But
for sure.
You still want to
have 1123 cassettes on their bikes.
Exactly. You still want to be able to provide a product to this particular segment of the population. And I think that that's good. So I guess for me, like, I think that that's a good thing. And I still love the fact that SRAM's going all electronic. I think that's a good thing because that's what the vast majority of people want. And I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. But I still think that they should be offering a mechanical version of their Apex and a mechanical version of their Rival. And then if you want to stick to electronic and with the Force and the Red stuff, that's fine.
They had that like double tap system.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
No. Okay. Not my favorite.
Moving on. Double tap.
The double tap stuff.
The double tap people.
Yeah, one of those was in not too long ago. We had to replace one of those, and I was playing with that. I'm like, yeah, I remember these guys. They still come in every now and then, and it's fun and all. Do you remember the very first time you rode one of those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is way back when.
I literally was like, you're shifting. I don't know how to shift this.
It's like, how do I get it to go back up? Because you didn't know that you had to push all the way.
It's weird.
All right. So what are your guys' thoughts on that, though? I mean, what are you thinking about the mechanical 12-speed Shimano stuff?
I'm not going back to mechanical on anything.
Yeah. And the 100% reason is?
It's simpler, cleaner, easier to maintain.
Works better.
Lighter, works better.
Yeah.
Easier to adjust.
I don't know if it's necessarily lighter, but...
Okay, well, it's true. It's not lighter.
It's marginal, but the...
Sure, like the crispness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yep.
I know Matt's a big, huge proponent of...
Electronic shifting is great. I love it. Yeah. I use it, and I don't think I would go for something new, but at the same time, it's like, if I'm going to get a used bike from Lance and it's mechanical, I'm not going to stress about it.
Yeah.
I'm at that point, I'm looking for a budget bike or whatever it is, or a good bike that's functional that... And you get what you get sometimes.
Yeah.
So
what we've been talking about here is pretty much 100% for road and gravel bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just like jump off that train real quick and talk about mountain bikes. Lance recently started riding a new Scott's Park, in which he has absolutely fallen in love with from what he said. Oh. And before that, he was riding a BMC 4-stroke, which was very well equipped, but it was 100% mechanical.
Yes.
The Spark is electronic shifting, axis shifting.
And it's got the new...
It's not axis. It's the...
Oh, the transmission.
The transmission.
It was axis.
Oh,
yeah, now it's transmission. So you've gotten to play with both of those. Any chance in hell that you're ever going to even consider going back to anything mechanical on the mountain bike side of things?
No.
Yeah.
None.
There's a huge difference there if you ask me, but
it shifts so much better.
Yeah. That transmission system just looks
and the transmission,
so good.
Dude, I wish every one of my bikes had the transmission on it. That's how much I like it.
That's what I hope too, is that they're going to take that and it's going to be hard to move it to road, but like that's what we want.
It's moved to gravel.
Yeah.
There are some gravel frames that do have a universal derailleur hanger that does allow it to
There's a hang up with that though still. They don't offer a big enough chain ring to make it make sense.
Up front.
Yeah. So your gearing ratios are gonna be a little off. What's the biggest is a 38.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I'm personally running a 46 up front, so is Lance.
I'm running a 46. Keegan Swenson ran a 48 at Unbound.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So
he's got more
when you're talking about
than us.
Yeah.
Like your standard just gravel cruiser guy, that might be just fine because a lot of bikes do come equipped with a 38 on there. But for the guy that's wanting to race and the guy that's wanting to get a little bit more speed out of the bike, especially in the flats and the descents, you need that bigger chain ring.
But on my mountain bike, I mean, it's money.
Yeah.
Okay, I stopped in Moab on my way back from the east, and I rode an area that, you know, I rode some trails that had 6,000 or 7,000 people who have done these Strava segments, and with that smooth shifting, I rode a very like rugged, bouncy, windy, tricky trail, and I like got top 10 on the trail. But part of that's my fitness. Part of it is this bike
it's efficient.
It's just efficient.
Yep.
I just didn't lose speed or it was
Don't blame it on the bike. It's
the bike.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Scott Troutman posted, best upgrades if you can't afford a new bike.
Wheels.
Wheels are so expensive. How about...
They are expensive.
Aero helmet. Go pointy helmet or go home, people.
I could just see Scott Troutman riding a pointy helmet right now.
Well, they do make more aero helmets that aren't...
Socks. Aeros, trip socks, those things, man. Yeah. They're cheap for what you get. You get like a couple watts and they're free.
$30.
$30 for those socks?
For like aero socks.
How many watts is it, do you think?
It's like 8.
It's pretty good.
So
Wax your chain. There you go.
Free but up. Over like two hours with 8-watt difference, that's, you know, that's 40 seconds
Shave
or
your
something.
Shave your legs. Upgrade your legs.
Some simple things. We all know that watts per kilogram are going to play a big difference maker when it comes to how well you climb. And at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of that's going to come from you personally. So if you're carrying a few extra pounds, go lose some weight. But on the bike itself, you can trim some weight and it doesn't have to be super expensive. Things that weigh a lot that you can definitely go out there and not spend a ton of money on, your handlebars, your stem, your seat post, those things are all going to kind of weigh in there and get to be a little bit chunky heavy.
You can be selective of what you carry in your saddlebag. Mm-hmm. If you've got, you know, if you're like me and you carry everything in the kitchen sink and you got video cameras and stuff, that's not good. Yeah. It's not efficient. What about, what was I going to ask you? You have done the water pack on the back, right?
Yeah.
The like camel back kind of style.
Yeah, I'm using an Usui pack.
And that's efficient. That's more efficient than a whole bunch of, you know, bottles on your frame. And especially people that put water bottles on the sides of their forks.
Yeah.
That's not pretty.
Yeah, definitely.
No one does that. That's racing.
The pack is more aerodynamic than a third bottle anywhere.
Yeah.
The bottles on your seat tube are supposedly going to make your bike a little bit more aerodynamic, at least from what I've seen or heard or read.
If your choices are those two spots, it's the seat tube because it basically you're getting like the wind gets wide around your
bike. From what I've read, it's more aerodynamic to have it in there than to not have any water bottle at all.
I don't think that's correct.
I don't know. I think it is. I'll look it up.
So this weekend's race, it was a 4-hour race for me, and I had two bottles and the pack, and I didn't stop at all.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge. If you think about efficiency through aid stations, there's lots of savings to be had there.
Yeah.
So let's start a few different scenarios on this one real quick before we move on, because there's so many different ways that you can break this one down. I think at the end of the day, it's really going to be specific to the person and the bike that they're riding, because if you've got a bike that's running like 10-speed Ultegra or whatever from, you know, 10 years ago, you're going to be limited in terms of like your upgrades that you can do. And that probably going to be rim brake, and you're going to have to like kind of play that game versus a person that maybe bought a bike just like 3 years ago that's maybe an alloy heavy 105 group set on it, or a, you know, something in that range. I mean,
it all comes down to like the individual and like seeing what they have to see where the upgrades might be.
Yeah.
But you know, another little spot, maybe like tires. I think a tires and would be some spot where you could be like, you can choose the gator skin tires, or there's other tires that are maybe a slightly more efficient.
Yeah.
And that could be a place where you can spend a little bit of money and get a lot of gain.
And there's a few other ways to look at this too. Like, is it just to, like, you want a new bike just because you want a new bike, and maybe your bike works just fine, but sometimes there's just little things that you can do to your bike to make it feel new to you. Like,
that's true.
A new chain makes a huge difference. Put some fresh bar tape on, there's some new tires.
Bar tape.
That makes it roll nice, and it gets you excited to go out there and ride it. So
a carbon seat post if you don't have one.
Yeah, that's going to soften up the ride, a little bit more compliant, and lighter. Mm, so there's a lot of little things that you can do to a bike that way, and getting a nice fresh tune, or maybe learning how to do that too on your bike is a good way to get you invigorated to go out there and ride more.
If you still have a rim brake bike,
uh-huh.
I guarantee you could find some fantastic, lighter, more aerodynamic wheels on the secondary market.
Oh, yeah. I need to sell some.
That could
I'm
be
just
a
gonna
good
go.
Upgrade because people are selling their rim
brake
stuff.
I have like two sets of wheels that are like race wheels that I need to get rid of.
And that stuff out there is super cheap. That's a good call, Lance.
That's a good call.
Secondary market for lightweight wheels. Like, they're crazy expensive if you're going to buy them new, but you know, you could probably find yourself a $2,000 pair of wheels for just a couple hundred bucks these days.
If they're rim brake,
just
for sure.
Be careful, buyer beware. You know, make sure that you're checking all of the wear dimples on those to make sure that you're not buying somebody else's problem. Make sure that they're true. Make sure that the spokes aren't stuck. Make sure that the bearings aren't bad. I mean, there's a lot of little things, and you know, if you're listening to this and you're not local and you can't come by the lab for us to check out these wheels before you buy them, go to your local bike shop and maybe have them do a quick inspection on them and give them their professional opinion.
You can always pay them for that, and they can. And everyone wins there.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else that you guys can think of on a bike that's going to make it, I don't know, a little bit more good to go?
Nope.
Good. All right.
Good call.
Moving on.
Moving along.
Thank you for the questions, everybody. We're going to have some more of this coming up in the future, so stay tuned. There's going to be some pretty cool options for you to submit your questions.
Oh, that's exciting.
You think so? Yeah.
I think actually it'll be more. I like having people write in with questions or call in with questions, because I think that would be fun.
All right, cool.
Champ here.
Champ Bailey.
Champ Bailey.
Champ is in the house.
Champ is here.
Go, Champ.
Not a whole lot happened since we spoke on Friday, three days ago.
You know, what's interesting is this is starting to be this like dead zone before the tour.
Yeah, so the Tour de Suisse wrapped up.
Yep.
And it's like the last big, big-ish stage race before the Tour de France starts, and you know, we talked about the mess that happened there with the death of the Swiss rider, which was a bummer. A lot of people ended up dropping out on that race as well, but still, there were still other races to go. I really don't have a whole lot to share.
Okay.
Because there wasn't, because yeah, this is a dead zone. People are prepping for the Tour de France.
Everyone's kind of going to altitude last little week or two before they fire it off. And this.
Well, Belgium has their national road race and national time trial, I
think,
this next week, right before the Tour de France. So that should be interesting.
And we have to do our tour podcast, our preview with our picks.
We have to do it next week. We got to do it. Whether we get Evan with us or not, we got to do it next week.
It would be fun to have Evan because he always picks Chris Froome every time.
Which takes me back. We did have one other listener question, I forgot to address this real quick. Austin Alling asked, who is the strongest leading into the tour? And my response to that is, tune in next week to find out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. did you guys know that the tour starts in 12 days from today?
12 days? From what today, day does it start?
July 1st.
July 1st.
I'm so upset because I'm heading out of town, like right for the start. Ugh.
That sucks. And you're not going to have like even cell service to watch
I'm going to find a way.
Do you have the Peacock app on your phone? Yeah. It's as long as you can find some sort of Wi-Fi or cell service, you can watch it.
I know.
I have Xfinity, Comcast, and
you just got told that you got to buy that.
Yeah, I now have to buy it. It's not included with Xfinity anymore.
Xfinity.
The premium Peacock is not included, so I have to pay for it, and I'm paying for it.
How much are you gonna have to pay though?
It's not that bad.
It's 12.
No, don't just go buy the Peacock app for 1 month at $6.
But I'm gonna use it all.
You can get a year. Maybe I have a discount code. I found a year for $20.
For the Peacock app?
I have the Peacock app.
It was like, come back.
If you have the Peacock app, that's where you can watch it. That's where
But I like to watch it on my...
Yeah.
Oh, you can...
Download it on Apple TV.
Download it on Apple TV.
Yeah.
I'll be watching it on my phone.
All right. Anything else for the old lead out there?
Nope. That's
Lancer?
It.
All right. Cool. Moving on. Backpedal.
Okay. I just got off the bike with David Goodman. We were coffee riding, stopped at coffee bike. And whatever. But then we were like, we got to chug this coffee because we're going to beat this storm.
Uh-huh.
We did not beat the storm. We got drenched out there. We stopped at some point because it was coming down pretty hard, and we just stopped under a tree for a minute, and then we got back going again, but we were going fast enough that we were getting caught in the rain again. So there's that.
Did you at least have that west tailwind?
Yes.
Nice.
It was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. Great ride.
We've had winds like almost daily that have been coming out of the west, and so all of the rides going into it always suck, but coming home's been a blast.
I'd rather have it that way. Did 7 miles on my run for my Sunday long run.
That's
good for me, man.
That's great.
For me, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. It's like something, and I felt good. And I think I had a decent week. I had a couple 5-milers and a 7-miler and some other little runs in there. And so
was that
heavy
your
mileage.
Father's Day gift to yourself was a nice 7-mile run?
And a trip to the swim meet. Because we were at the Dalles all weekend. And part of it was like raining and windy and cold and gross. And it was just like, we're out there. There's no like coverage at all. So you're just out in the elements and you're watching kids swim.
Oh,
I was going to say, did you take your computer with you? But probably not to get stuff done. No. It would be nice to optimize your time. But if you're sitting outside in the elements, it's like, yeah, no.
Well, you have to park so far away and walk in that you're just, because otherwise I'd be like, I'll go sit in the car because it's way better. But it was like, then you miss the next race or whatever it is. So
bummer.
Anyway, swim meets, swim life, hashtag swim life dad.
I ate a whole lemon meringue pie for Father's Day.
Oh my God.
Your backpedal's over.
That's it. That's all that matters.
My backpedal real quick. We did this podcast on Friday. I did the fog hat ride and I have not been on my bike since. So
was the fog hat ride good? I gotta make it to one of those. Those are cool.
I am officially off the bike for a little while. So I'll be doing some zone one stuff for the next week. I'm starting some rehab protocol stuff for this hip thigh thing I got going on. So
you need some time off to let that thing heal.
Yeah, because it's getting bad again. So I was wanting to go race this past weekend, and Friday afternoon I called it and said this probably isn't a good idea, and I woke up Saturday morning and I'm like, yeah, that was the right call.
So zone one is your...
Just for this week. I'm actually going to use it as a recovery week. At the same time, I'm going to see the doc again. I have an appointment to go see the Pilates physical therapist instructor person, and I'm going to try a few other little things too. More protocol related to getting some more range of motion there. But
I think the biggest thing is you got to plan. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't care if I have to take time off of whatever I like doing, as long as it's like there's a planned progression of like, we're going to attack this injury and we're going
to... Yeah. I'm in need of a recovery week anyway, so the timing is good, and I just want to try and nip this thing in the bud.
You can ride with me. Yeah, it's always zone one when you hang out with Matt.
There you go.
Yep.
But if you need a professional power washer, I'm your guy. did some serious power washing yesterday for Father's Day.
Father's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just working around the house. Lance Hepler, you raced your bike this weekend.
I did. We talked about the Ashes to Glory Gravel State Championships for the state
glory?
Of Oregon.
Was there a lot of glory?
So much FOMO from that.
Was there? Was it more on the Ashes side or was it glory?
I have no idea why it's called Ashes to Glory. It's because it's in the central Oregon dead volcano zone. I don't
they
know.
They have plenty of fires there.
Maybe.
Or it's like referring to your race. You're either Ashes.
I was Ashes.
Or, yes. Okay. That's what we want to hear about.
Yeah. So finally, this year I had a suck race. Things did not go well for me. And I really shouldn't be surprised. I have been kind of rolling pretty hard for months. Yeah. So the race was roughly 62 miles and like 6,500 feet of climbing is what my Garmin.
That's a sweet spot for you though.
Yeah, well, it's a little too much climbing for me.
Okay.
And because it was the state championships, a lot of people showed up that haven't been doing gravel races. And okay. So we all started together, you know, all the different age groups, which was great. We had a few teammates out there. We started with one like 3-ish mile climb and then a big long bombing descent, you know, until like mile 30. And then there was a couple of really long climbs as well.
Did those get pretty pitchy, the climbs?
The one longest gravel climb, it had a section that was like a mile and a half over like 11%.
Oofed.
Yeah, so that was a lot. And it was on loose gravel, so it was not easy. And it was 40 miles into the race. It was that split things up. So yeah, so I didn't fare all that well.
It's good to see you have a bad race.
Yeah.
You can't win everything.
It was like, it was about mile 6 where I knew all the people in my age group and I saw 5 of them just ride away from me. And I'm like, oh, it. I'm not staying with those guys. There's no chance of me staying with those guys. So of course I ripped the descent, which was a blast. I ended up with a listener to the podcast, Freddie Mills, who lives in Bend, and we ended up being able to, he descends really well as well. And
you guys had fun.
We had a blast. And then we traded poles for several miles to try to stay away, but eventually I got caught by my two teammates, Ian Gibson and David Barna.
You almost broke those guys.
I almost broke those guys. David went up the road from me because on this big 9.5 mile climb, I just could not stay with him. But Ian stayed with me. And at that point, we were halfway through the race, and I knew that Ian was probably still vying for the win or for the podium, and my race was gone. So for the last half of the race, I was Ian's boy.
Super domestique. Yeah. You're super domestique.
I was just Ian's boy. Good. He sat on my wheel for a lot of miles. I made sure that, you know, he started to kind of lose it on one of the like tops of one of the climbs, and there was a lot of yelling at him to stay with me.
Good job.
And he did. He was able to stay with me. And so Ian ended up making second in the 60 plus.
What
division.
Was the gap between him and the winner?
It was actually like 12 minutes. There was some guy that was just gone. Some Hutch's Dental guy. Hutch's Ben.
Was just on that day, huh?
Yeah, and a guy we've never seen before. I didn't even know his name. He's, you know, he's a Ben guy that just hasn't gone to any gravel races, but this was the state championship.
Backyard, yep.
So
good job, Ian.
He showed up.
Nice work, sir.
So Ian did great. So that was fun to help him out. I was happy to be a part of that. And we also helped the lead woman, the person who won the women's race outright.
Gotcha.
She was able to stay with us too, and she was happy to be with us too. I think her name is Christy Cutter or something like that. So
sweet.
It was fun.
Sweet.
That was it. And then I ate a whole pie.
Nice job. Good job on the pie.
One last thing, Matt, go.
I just posted a video and it started to do pretty well, but it's kind of slacking off a little bit. But it was I think I even mentioned this last week that I was going to be doing this, and it was the Apple Watch Ultra versus the Garmin Epix Pro. Just like, here's the new software on the Apple Watch Ultra. Here's the brand new Epix Pro from Garmin. They're brand new. They're two things. Let's compare them. And it's a video. It's a video and it's on the YouTubes, and you guys should check it out. Watch it if you're interested.
Nice.
Cool. Yep. Oh, and I'm going to hit 20K at some point. So keep an eye out on the if you're not subscribed, jump on it. You could be my 20,000th subscriber.
And if you are
you win something.
20,000th subscriber, reach out to us and let us know that was you. Take a screenshot of it so we can see that that was actually you.
Yes. And you will win.
How close are you?
Like 80 subscribers or something.
Okay. It'll probably even hit before we get this podcast out then. maybe.
Yeah, actually it might. Yeah. It might be in the next day or two.
Okay. So. Well, if it's Wednesday when this comes out and you haven't subscribed to his channel yet and you go in there and you're the,
you can be the winner.
20,000th person, be the winner.
You can be the winner. So what do you win? We don't know.
We will give you something cool.
Lance's bikes, all of them.
Lance will wax your chains.
All right. He will wax your chains.
Send them all to Dustin.
One last thing, Matt. Lance, or Matt, you're out of here, right?
Matt's out of here.
All right, buddy. Matt's going to go drop the kids off at the pool.
Matt's got business to take care of. We'll just leave it at that.
It's 4:20. Matt's got to go drop the kids off at the pool.
I am really taking
the kids whatever.
That's all literal stuff there, too. No euphemisms.
No euphemisms.
One last thing, Lance.
I am doing the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder this week. So I leave tomorrow for Central Oregon. It's basically 330 miles over 5 days with about 30,000 feet of climbing. I think there's about 300 people there doing it. So not a huge thing, but a big kind of logistically difficult stage race that Chad Sperry is putting on. He's done it, I think, for 4 years now. I think he's done it 4 years. This is his fourth year. And I'm excited to go. It's kind of like gravel summer camp. You camp at it's a point-to-point race, so you camp at each site. Chad's team hauls all your stuff for you from point to point. Most people sleep in tents. They feed you all the meals. They give you all the stuff. There's entertainment every night. Mm. It's just kind of a big, fun party. I am one of the, I think there's 18 different people that has a van following them. So I'm sleeping in my van, not in,
Did you have to pay to have your van be able to chase as well?
Gosh. Correct. Yes. And you have to have a driver. So you can't, you have to have somebody willing to come for the whole week. And Brandy is an all-star. And so she's coming to drive the van. And yeah, you have to pay a little bit extra to have that because they... Because the driver also participates in all the meals and all the
entertainment. Oh, so they're fed and entertained as well. Yep. That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if they're just doing that just to extract a few more bucks from your pocketbook, that's kind of crappy. But the fact that they're getting taken care of too is neat.
It's actually kind of cool. They they put out a rider guide, but they also put out a driver guide that gives them things to do on each day while we're racing.
That's cool.
Go to this lake. It's great for paddleboarding or for kayaking. Do this hike because it's right here on the way. Huh. There's a small detour to go here if you want to. Yeah, so it's really well organized and really well put on. So we're kind of looking forward to it. I am not expecting any results from this. I'm going to enjoy the whole week and try not to implode. The hardest day is day 4, which is almost 100 miles and 10,000 feet of climbing. And so I will be pretty shattered at that point anyway. So I don't have any expectations as far as racing. I'm just going to have
Now, do they have like a stage winner every single day and then a GC?
Yes.
Kind of okay, that's cool. Are they doing awards for people every single day? So they're doing it right.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you would change to make this better?
That's a good question.
I mean,
I wish there was a 50 to 55 age group.
Now, do they cap the number of people that they allow to come into this race?
Yes.
And is it because it would be too logistically difficult to have even more than that?
Correct. Huh. Because they can only haul so many people's stuff to the next site. And the campsites that we have, they're generally like high school tracks, and we're all on the infield, except where the RVs are parked.
I have it in the back of my head that you guys are sleeping out in the middle of nowhere, so you're going to be in some sort of an area where...
Correct.
It's a civilized area.
Correct.
Okay.
We're at a high school or at some big park, like in Oak Ridge, which is a huge mountain bike mecca. We actually stay there 2 nights because the stage the next day is time trial format. Oh, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. There's 2 time sections the next day, and we actually stay in the same place. But there's an uphill time trial and a downhill time trial.
Nice.
So we'll see how that goes. So
how many teammates are going out there? I know that's Edward Dudlick's going to be out there.
I only have Edward.
Just the two of you. Yeah, huh?
Just the two of us. Huh. Ed is camping, yep. And so, but he will have access to whatever the van has,
sure.
And whatever nice brandy kind there. Of brings. But really, they cover snacks and desserts and the food and the breakfast, and there's showers every night. There's okay. a place to shower every night. So it really is. You're well taken care of. It's not cheap. It's like $1,200 to do the week long thing.
That was where I was going with bring more people in to maybe make it a little bit more accessible and affordable for a lot of folks, because a lot of people, they just can't afford to take a week off. But if they could, they can't afford the $1,200 price tag that comes with it. So that's a difficult part.
So it's spendy.
Yeah.
And the last several years, they've had some really big names come out and do this. And we don't quite as have many big pro names that are coming this year to do it. And I don't know if that's because of the Lifetime Grand Prix Fitness. Last year, they had four people from the Grand Prix that came out to do it. And part of that's probably because Chad Sperry was probably enticing them to come to try to get more exposure for the race, but there are still several coming. So
there are still several big hitters that are going to be out there. There's also a lot more races. It's becoming more diluted. So there's big things going on all over the country now. Are there many other multi-day gravel stage races that are this well supported? Probably not that many.
Other than Rebecca's Private Idaho.
Yeah. Can you think of anything else? I mean, there might be something in the Midwest or the East Coast that we're not pervy to.
There might be, but I can't think of a multi-day stage race other than Rebecca's Private Idaho and Oregon Trail. And what's funny is Chad Sperry's Breakaway Promotions is who puts on Rebecca's Private Idaho too. He's not the promoter, but he is the facilitator for the race. His group puts it on.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, that's good for him.
It's good for Chad. Chad's doing good.
Yeah. He's got a lot of cool races out there. He just lost one though, if I'm not mistaken.
That was Mike Ripley's.
Is it Ripley? I thought it was Breakaway Promotions.
It's Ochoco.
Yeah.
The gravel.
Yeah. They lost.
They didn't get the permit for it.
So they had to.
They have to cancel it entirely.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
So. Awesome. Well, not awesome, but...
So that's what I've got coming up.
Cool.
Yep.
That's a lot of one last thing, but that's a big one last thing.
I'll have a lot to talk about next week with this race. And I'll probably be posting pictures and stories on Instagram.
Where can people go to Instagram to see said stories, Mr. Hepler?
I'm at Dr. Hep, at D-R-H-E-P-P, or just look for Lance Hepler
and
see the idiot with the bad mustache.
Lance is going to be doing all of the riding, and my one last thing is, again, I'm not doing any of the riding really. I'm going to probably be sitting on a trainer. I'm probably going to be doing some easy rides outside for the next week or so, just to kind of give my body some time to recover and get this thing nailed down. My question to you on my one last thing, Lance, what else should I be doing this week?
Oh, take your wife out.
Yeah. That's probably not a bad idea. Did she pay you to say that?
No.
Not a bad idea. Maybe I'll wax my chain.
Maybe wax your chain.
Yes.
Pull some chains off and wax them.
Maybe that's going to happen this week. We'll have to report back and I'll let you know. So
it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I got to order some more of those. We've only got, I think, one left at the lab. I didn't realize we had a whole bunch. And then I went back and looked and we only had one.
Of the actual Silka wax.
Exactly.
Not the chain stripper, but the wax.
Yeah, I think we're out of the chain stripper. That will be coming in and I'll order some more of those things. So Silka, I'll be giving you a call. Well, all right, we will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye now.
How are you guys sounding? How are the airwaves looking?
It's good. I'm interested. Like, your waveforms always look different.
They look small, don't they?
They're
petite.
They shoot
downward. You use them, Jake.
Not everybody can be long and strong.
I mean,
again, he's a grower, not a shower.
Again, it's the thickness, you know, not the.
It may be small, but it's as thick as a soup can.
Like a tuna can. can of tuna.
I'm right there with you.
Right?
Stay on target.
We're too close.
Stay on target.